Physiologists deny that fright can turn one's hair white. They argue that they cannot conceive how a fright could withdraw the pigmentation from hairs, so they conclude that all alleged records of this phenomenon are yarns. Say it's a black-haired person. The physiologists, except very sketchily, cannot tell us how that hair became black, in the first place. Somewhere, all the opposition to the data of this book is because the data are not in agreement with something that is not known. There have been many alleged instances. See the indexes of notes and queries, series 6, 7, 10. I used to argue that Queen Marie Antoinette's deprivation of cosmetics, in prison, probably accounted for her case. Now that my notions have shifted, that cynicism has lost its force to me. Mostly the instances of hair turning white, because of fright, are antiques, and can't be investigated now. But see the New York Times, February 8, 1932. Story of the sinking of a fishing schooner, by the Belgian steamship, Jean Jadot. 21 members of the crew drowned, 6 of them saved, among them Arthur Burke, aged 52. Arthur Burke's hair was streaked with gray before the collision, but was quite gray when Burke landed yesterday, at Pier 2, Erie Basin. It may be that there have been thousands, or hundreds of thousands, of cases in which human beings have died in violent convulsions that were the products of beliefs and that, also, merciful, but expensive, science has saved a multitude of lives, with a serum that has induced contrary beliefs just as that serum, if injected into the veins of somebody, suffering under the oppressive pronouncement that 2 × 2 = 4, could be his salvation by inducing a belief that 2 × 2 = purple, if he should want so to be affected. Or what has become of hydrophobia? In the New York Telegram, November 26, 1929, was published a letter from Gustav Stryker, quoting Dr. Matthew Woods, of Philadelphia, a member of the Philadelphia County Medical Society. Dr. Woods had better look out, unless he's aiming at cutting down expenses, such as dues to societies. Said Dr. Woods. We have observed with regret numerous sensational stories, concerning alleged mad dogs and the terrible results to human beings bitten by them, which are published from time to time in the newspapers. Such accounts frighten people into various disorders, and cause brutal treatment of animals suspected of madness, and yet there is on record a great mass of testimony from physicians asserting the great rarity of hydrophobia even in the dog, while many medical men of wide experience are of the opinion that if it develops in human beings at all it is only upon extremely rare occasions, and that the condition of hysterical excitement in man, described by newspapers as hydrophobia, is merely a series of symptoms due usually to the dread of the disease, such a dread being caused by realistic newspapers and other reports, acting upon the imaginations of persons scratched or bitten by animals suspected of rabies. At the Philadelphia Dog Pound, where on an average more than 6,000 vagrant dogs are taken annually, and where the catchers and keepers are frequently bitten while handling them, not one case of hydrophobia has occurred during its entire history of 25 years, in which time, about 150,000 have been handled. My own attention was first attracted, long ago, when I noticed, going over files of newspapers, the frequency of reported cases of hydrophobia a generation or so ago, and the fewness of such reports in the newspapers of later times. Dogs are muzzled, now in streets, in houses they're not. Vaccines, or powdered toads, caught at midnight, in graveyards, would probably cure many cases, but would not reduce the number of cases in dogs, if there ever have been cases of hydrophobia in dogs. In the New York Times, July 4, 1931, was published a report by M. Roland, of the Municipal Council of Paris. It will be noticed that rabies has almost entirely disappeared, although the number of dogs has increased. From 166,917 dogs in Paris, in 1924, the number had risen, in 1929, to 230,674. In spite of this marked increase, only 10 cases of rabies in animals were observed. There were no cases of rabies in man. Sometimes it is my notion that there never has been a case of hydrophobia, as anything but an instance of personal witchcraft, but there are so many data for thinking that a disease in general is very much like an individual case of the disease, in that it runs its course and then disappears quite independently of treatment, whether by the poisoned teat of a cow, or the dried sore of a mummy, that I suspect that once upon a time there was, to some degree, hydrophobia. When I was a boy, pitted faces were common. What has become of smallpox? Where are yellow fever and cholera? I'm not supposed to answer my own questions, am I? But serums, say the doctors. But there are enormous areas in the Americas and Europe, where vaccines have never penetrated. But they did it, say the doctors. Eclipses occur, and savages are frightened. The medicine men wave wands the sun is cured, they did it. The story of diseases reads like human history: the rise and fall of Black Death and the appearance and rule of smallpox, the tubercular empire and the united afflictions of yellow fever and cholera. Some of them passed away before serums were thought of, and in times when sanitation was unpopular. Several hundred years ago there was a leper's house in every good-sized city in England. 100 years ago there had not been much of what is called improvement in medicine and sanitation, but leprosy had virtually disappeared, in England. Possibly the origin of leprosy in England was in personal witchcraft, or that if the Bible had never devastated England, nobody there would have had the idea of leprosy, that when wicked doubts arose, the nasty suspicions of people made them clean. So it may be that once upon a time there was hydrophobia, but the indications are that most of the cases that are reported in these times are sorceries wrought by the minds of victims upon their bodies. A case, the details of which suggest that occasionally a dog may be rabid, but that his bites are dangerous only to a most imaginatively excited victim, is told of, in the New York Herald Tribune, November 16, 1931. 10 men were bitten by a dog. The dog was killed, and was found to have the rabies. The men were sailors aboard the United States destroyer, J.D. Edwards, at Chifu, China. One of these sailors died of hydrophobia. The 9 others showed no sign of the disease. In such a matter as a fright turning hair gray, it is probable that conventional scientists mechanically, unintelligently, or with little consciousness of the whiness of their opposition, deny the occurrences, as unquestioning obediences to taboo. My own concatenation of thoughts is that, if one's mental state can affect the color of one's hair, a mental state may in other ways affect one's body, and then that one's mental state may affect the bodies of others, and this is the path to witchcraft. It is not so much that conventional scientists disregard, or deny, what they cannot explain if, in anything like a final sense, nothing ever has been, or can be, explained. It is that they disregard or deny, to clip concatenations that would lead them from concealed ignorance into obvious bewilderment. Every science is a mutilated octopus. If its tentacles were not clipped to stumps, it would feel its way into disturbing contacts. To a believer, the effect of the contemplation of a science is of being in the presence of the good, the true, and the beautiful. But what he is awed by is mutilation. To our crippled intellects, only the maimed is what we call understandable, because the unclipped Rami feeds a way into all other things. According to my aesthetics, what is meant by the beautiful is symmetrical deformation. By justice in phenomenal being I mean the appearance of balance, by which a reaction is made to look equal and opposite to an action so arbitrarily wrought by the clip and disregard of all ramifications of the action expressing in the supposed condign punishment of a man, regardless of effects upon other persons. This is the arbitrary basis of the mechanical theory of existence, the idea that an action can be picked out of a maze of interrelationships, as if it were a thing in itself. Some wisdom of mine is that if a man is dying of starvation he cannot commit a crime. He is good. The god of all idealists is malnutrition. If all crimes are expressions of energy, it is unjust to pick on men for their crimes. A higher jurisprudence would indict their breakfasts. A good cook is responsible for more evil than ever the demon rum has been, and, if we'd all sit down and starve to death, at last would be realized utopia. My expression is that, if illnesses, physical contortions, and deaths can be imposed by the imaginations of persons upon their own bodies, we may develop the subject matter of a preceding chapter, with more striking data. Or the phenomenon of the stigmata, which, considered sacred by Pietists, is aligned by me with hydrophobia. This phenomenon is as profoundly damned, in the views of all properly trained thinkers, as are crucifixes, sacraments, and priestly vestments. As to its occurrence, I can quote dozens of churchmen, of the highest authority, but not one scientist, except a few Catholic scientists. Over and over and over, science and its system and theology and its system and the fights between interpretations by both, and my thought that the freeing of data from the coercions of both may, or may not, be of value. Once upon a time the religionists denied, or disregarded much that the scientists announced. They have given in so disastrously, or have been licked so to a frazzle, that, in my general impression of controversies that end up in compromises, this is defeat too nearly complete to be lasting. I conceive of a return movement open to freethinkers and atheists in which many of the data of religionists scrubbed clean of holiness will be accepted.